record to the top of it.
So we left off last time. The last time we had discussed, which is, I think, almost 3 weeks ago, we started to talk about the question of musk in the Gemara. One point of clarification about this musk, I did a little bit of research. It did strike me as strange. Musk oxes is a source of some type of odor, although it's generally not considered a great odor. And it would have been unlikely that they would have had this in Eretz Yisrael. The musk ox is limited generally to the polar regions of the north. But this almost certainly is coming from something like the musk deer, which is found in Asia. And it is, seems very likely they could have had this in Eretz Yisrael. Certainly many of the spices made their way from India, from that region, from Southeast Asia to Eretz Yisrael in the Roman period. And so that's what we're talking about here. And it was actually considered something very valuable in terms of perfume. So that's the musk that we're talking about here. Now the musk actually, so from a purely, I guess, I don't want to say zoological, but the biological perspective, the musk comes from the glands in the deer. The musk is not blood. It's not blood that's converted into something else. It's a substance that's secreted by these deer. There are, by the way, other sources of musk. They may even, things that I should say smell like musk. There's certain plants, but clearly the Gemara here says explicitly that it's from a chayah. It's from an animal. And the Gemara said that that's the only thing that you don't make a borei ase b'samim on, meaning when you burn something, when you burn mugmar, even though the spices are no longer be'en, they're not extant because they're burned, since that's the normal way of using them, you make the bracha borei ase b'samim, even though the etzim are no longer extant, but they were when they were burned to create the smell. Whereas musk, you obviously can't say borei ase b'samim because musk is from, an animal. Now, here is where the discussion becomes very interesting. And I started to talk about this last time. Before we look at the Rishonim, I want to really sort of throw out two concepts, one which I broached last time, and the other which it comes up a little bit in this discussion, but it's really distinct. And when I heard it discussed, there's a tendency, it seems, to blur the lines between the two. The first one is the question of Issur Shenishtaneh. On the assumption, which is not true biologically, but it doesn't really matter because the Rishonim are assuming it is, and so at least to the purposes and theory in other cases, not in this case, it is very relevant. When you have an Isser, which is the Shtana, you have an Isser that starts out as one thing, which is Isser, let's say it's blood in this case, and then it turns into something else, where it's no longer recognizable as blood. It's actually musk. Again, assuming that that were the origin of the musk, and the question is, so we're talking about smelling it, but the question would be, what would the din be if you wanted to consume it? What if you wanted to throw it into a pot for adding flavor or adding smell? Would that be a problem of achila? Or do you say that once the isser is nishtana, then it is permissible to consume? Let me give you a better, you're going to kind of looking at me wondering like, okay, very nice, but this musk thing is all imaginary because it's not coming from blood. Where would you ever have an isser shenishtana? So I'll give you an example of this issue. I don't know if you have whiskeys, some types of whiskey, I guess distilled liquor that was made from wine. But the distillation process, the product at the other end is nothing like the wine that started out. So the Achiezer, Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, who was, probably the preeminent Ashkenazi posek up until World War II in the first half of the 20th century, so Chaim Ozer, I don't know that he actually formally gives his approval to it, but he mentions it in passing as a limud zchus on those Jews who drink whiskey that might have been made from wine without any type of hashgacha, without knowing that it's kashrus, because the assumption is that even if it were Isser to start with, even if it were Samyenam to start with, Isser Shenishtana is mutter. Now, it's worth commenting on this, that Isser Shenishtana is only relevant if you're talking about Isurei Achila, something that's only usher to eat. So then if it's Nishtana completely, maybe it's not usher to eat anymore. If something is also usher Bahana, so then being Nishtana doesn't help. For example, it's clear from the first Mishnah in the second parak in Pesachim, if you have chametz, the Mishnah says if you have chametz and you burn it before the Zman Isser chametz, you burn it before the fourth hour, before the end of the fourth hour on Erev Pesach, you are allowed to be nana from the ashes after the fourth hour. Why? Because you destroyed the chametz before. It's not chametz. It doesn't become asur. But if you left the chametz till after the fourth hour, and now the chametz becomes, let's say, the end of the fifth hour when it's asur b'hanah, so now it's asur b'hanah. If you burn it, you're not allowed to be nana from the ashes. So clearly, I mean, you don't get much more of a shinui than that. It started out as bread. Now it's ashes. If that's not ishur shenishtana, it's hard to know what is. And that's asur b'hanah. So you can only talk about ishur shenishtana when you talk about ishur achila. So if you happen to assume, we discussed this a very long time ago, Maseches Avodah Zarah, if you happen to assume that Stam Yenam, the way the Mechaber does, is asur b'hanah, midrabana, but it's asur b'hanah, so ishur shenishtana is not going to help you. But if you assume what the way the practice of Ashkenaz was, that Stam Yenam is only asur b'shtia, you're only not allowed to drink it. In Ashkenaz, they were very makel in terms of hanah, in terms of selling it. Unfortunately, some Jews were makel in terms of drinking it too. But in terms of selling it, so therefore, it's theoretically possible to apply the category of Issur Shenishtana to Stam Yenam, which was then distilled and produced this whiskey. Now, that's one type of issue. The other issue, which revolves around, and I will show you the sources in a little bit. The other issue is, what happens if you have an Issur which has been rendered inedible, but you decide to eat it? So you might have some type of, and I'll tell you where this comes up. You have an Issur Hanah, which is used in medicine. It's used to make medicine. When you make a pill, assuming it's not a chewable, assuming it's just to be swallowed and there's no taste, so nobody would say that it's roi lachila, but nonetheless, you're eating. So the question is, if you go ahead and you eat it, does that now mean that, well, it's obviously edible because you ate it? This is a principle that we refer to as achshavei. You gave it hashivos, even though by ordinary standards it's not considered edible, but you go ahead and eat it, so that means now, at least for you, it's roi lachila, and perhaps there is an isser. We assume if it's asr, it's asr midrabana. So both of these questions, by the way, the Issur Shenishtana, which is not about edibility, it was edible before, it's edible now, but it's different versus something which is essentially the same as before, but it's rendered inedible. Does your eating it now constitute make it roi lachila, at least with Rabbanon, in order for it to be awesome? So those are two issues, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But for the moment, let's come back to our musk issue, and I'm going to share the screen with you. Got to find my share screen. Okay, so if you look at the screen now, I start with the rush here. And the rush says, Amar Rav Chisda, he's quoting the Gemara, if I can highlight where I highlighted. Let me make this actually a little bigger. I apologize. I should, might as well make it big. Okay. So we're here. Amar Rav Chisda. Al hamugmaros kula mevarcham aleim borei atzei v'samim. Chutz mimusk dimin chayahu. It is a species of animal. I mean, it comes from an animal. Shemevarcham ala borei minei v'samim. So now he says, yesh omen shahamusk huzeas chayah. There are those who say that musk is the sweat of some type of animal. If you actually look in Rashi on the Gemara, Rashi says it's worse. He says that it's min harei shel behemoth, from the dung of an animal. Now, if these two things were true, there would be nothing remarkable about them. If you have dung, even from a non-kosher animal, you're not supposed to eat it because it's vile and disgusting, and it's a violation of bal tishaktu es nafsho secha. But nonetheless, it's not asur. I mean, it's not asur machalas asuros. If you have pig's dung, we don't say it's a product of the pig. Unlike pig's milk, pig's dung, aside from being vile and disgusting, is not asur to eat as machalas asuros. So if the musk were just the zeya of achaya, or as Rashi says, the rei of achaya, it would be unremarkable and uninteresting for our purposes. But the Rush continues and says, "V'nachon Yoser, shefaya yaduahi, It's a known animal. It has some type of a hump on its neck. That's probably the musk glands of a deer. Again, the what is being described here by Rishonim, they've never seen a musk deer. Initially, what gathers in this gland is something like blood. The aha kachozer v'nasa musk, but then it turns into musk. So again, let's accept this biologically, even if it's not actually true. It doesn't start out as blood. Now, v'haramaha levizal, it's not the Balhamor. The Balhamor is Rosrachia, but it should be the Ramah. And this is all quoted in Rabbeinu Yonah right here in our Agama. So, v'ramer halevizal, haya oser la'achlo, he prohibited eating it, mitnei chashash dam, because it might be blood. V'haravrabeinu Yonah zal pirish, te'efshar litein botam lahatir, one might be able to give a reason to be permitted, meaning to permit eating it. The lomar de pirsha ba'alma. To say that it's like pirsha ba'alma. Pirsha ba'alma means like dung. It means the stuff that passes through the animal. Af al pi shemitchila hayadam, even though it originally was blood, lo chayshina lahachi, de basar hashta adlina. We don't care that it was once blood. We care what it is now. And now it's musk. It's just something else. It's a thing that, it's a byproduct of the animal. You follow not what it once was, but basar hashta, what it is now. Shaharei, now here's the kicker. Shaharei ha-davash. Imnaf albo chaticha shel is. Supposing a piece of prohibited food falls into honey. V'af al-gav shahayisr nimoach v'soch ha-davash. Even though the iser dissolves within the honey, Kevin shederech advash lahasir hadavar nofa l'tocho advash. Since it is a characteristic of honey, now just accept this, I don't think this, we would regard this as true, to turn something that sits in it for a long time into honey. It converts into honey. Therefore, kimo devash dainin alay. We treat it as if it is honey umota. It's mutter. The hochanami, apalpi, Shemitri lahayadam, even though it was originally dam, kevan sheyatza mitoras dam, once it is no longer blood, basar hashta azlinan, we treat it, we look at what it is now, and now it's, musk. The af al pishenosein tam lishvach betavshil, and even though it may emit a positive flavor into the food, it's not a problem. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. And now, this must be a typo here. It should be Velonira. I want to just check. I didn't read this earlier. I read the Rush. But I think in the Rush, he's going to say Velonira. He doesn't think it's correct. One second. There's a correction here. Actually, no, it does say Velonira, but I don't understand what that word means. He says, "Venira deha afilu rayaso tzricha raya." It would appear, I'll read it this way, that even Rabbeinu Yonah's raya requires a raya. Meaning, the Rush is challenging the entire premise. You claim that if something sits in honey and is converted into honey, that it's now mutar. The Rush says, "How do you know that that's true?" But you're saying that A, our case of musk is similar to B, the case of honey converting stuff, and just as the honey is permissible, so is the musk. Well, how do you know the honey is permissible? So, classically, what is quoted, it's the Rush himself is not unequivocal, but I think he's understood that way, is that the Rush disagrees with Rabbeinu Yonah, and he believes that Isser Shinishtana doesn't change its status, where Rabbeinu Yonah says that it does. Okay, so that is a Machlokas HaRishon. The question, of course, now becomes how to Paskin, presumably there are, as I mentioned last week, it's not clear where, what this falls under, but some try to tie this to the gelatin issue. It's not clear to me that this is really the gelatin issue. The gelatin issue, I think, is more the question that I spoke about earlier. If something is rendered inedible, but then you use it, then you eat it. Right? Gelatin, once you extract it, and this is apparently debated, whether it's true or not. gelatin is taken from bones. Now, bones are generally regarded as not roi l'achila. So some want to argue that the gelatin, even from, what is clear is that if you have gelatin from a kosher animal that was slaughtered properly, a kosher species slaughtered properly, that gelatin is mutter, and it's not even fleischer. It doesn't have tambas. But the question is, what if you were taking gelatin from the bone of a non-kosher animal, or gelatin from the bone of an adela, kosher animal that didn't have proper slaughtering? Ordinarily, we say that a bone without marrow, you're allowed, there's no isser, no isser whatsoever. In fact, if I have a, we say this in Yeridah, supposing that I have kosher meat, and into that kosher meat, I throw a rib steak of an animal that was nevela. So the way at least the Mechaber paskins in Shulchan Aruch is that when I am trying to be mevatel the nevela meat, and I am adding up the rest of the stuff in the pot to see if they're shishim, if they're 60, the bone, assuming there's no marrow in it, certainly, the bone of the nevela that the nevela meat is attached to combines with the kosher meat in order to be mevatel the trace meat that's on the bone. So it would normally bones we would say are kosher because they're not edible. Meaning if you have a non-marrow pig's bone, you're allowed to eat it because it's not roi l'achila. Again, putting aside the second question we have to deal with about Ashere, but principally speaking, it's not Yisr. So if that's the case, why would gelatin be Osir? Some would say because when you extract the gelatin, that is edible. In the bone, it's not. But this cartilage-like material that can be extracted would be Osir. So, but the question is, if it is at some point rendered, processed, and rendered in such a fashion that either doesn't look like the previous thing, or inedible, so that, it's not clear to me where gelatin falls out in the spectrum of this question, whether it's really Issa Shemeshtane, or whether it's Issa that's in a Roi L'Achila. Now the question is whether you employ the principle of Akshave to say that even though it's not really edible, but you're eating it, therefore it is considered edible. But for the moment at least, if you go back to our case that I mentioned before of the Stam Yenam, so in that case, if you have Stam Yenam, which is distilled and creates this whiskey, Rav Chaim Ozer at least claims that that is called Issa Shenishtane, or might be Issa Shenishtane, and might be, he doesn't say it's Mutter, but he talks about a lot of people whose practice was to not worry about a Hashtacha on it, they weren't about, worried about whether the whiskey was made from wine, because it's Issa Shenishtane. Now, in truth, I think that a lot of the contemporary poskim are reluctant to be lenient on this, but if you read the Mishnah Berurah, it's kind of interesting. The Mishnah Berurah says, Kigon hamask, uvashon laz, I don't know what this word is, uvashonim zeh bonin achayah, v'fitach mevarech aleha, borim ee v'shonim. Okay, so that's our din in Gemara Brachos. That's the Bracha Yenechma. But now he says, v'dash hamask zoh, zeh yesh omim shebomi zeh achayah. There are those who say it's the product of achayah. V'yesh omim shebomi dam shechayah achas, some say this is what the Rush quoted. If you assume that that in fact is the origin of the mask, now those who wanted to say it's also to put it into the food to give kind of a flavor through its smell. The dam osa b'achila, because you're not allowed to eat blood. The harbe poskim matira. There are many poskim or matir, afilu lasais b'kedera, even to put it straight into the pot, not just to smell it. The azlinan basar hashta, you look at what it is now, this is Rabbeinu Yonah. The hashta lav damu, ela afra ba'almosh, and no same reach tov. It's no longer dam. I guess he's thinking about the dried version of it, which simply gives reach tov. The ayin ve'eliyahu rabba shemitzadei lahoros kedivrein. The Eliyahu rabba is note that he leans in favor of being lenient. To the prima gadim and mishpat azav v'tadei gam kein deyishlis nochad varam lahakel af lechatzila v'shiyeh shishim keneg de betavshil. He said, he's not quite as lenient. He says that if you have 60 times the musk in a tashil, even though normally we say that something that's there to give flavor is not batel, even if you have 60 times. Meaning, for example, let's say you have, cinnamon, which, however you would get cinnamon, that's awesome. Not so clear how you would get cinnamon, that's awesome, but let's say you have cinnamon, that's awesome. Cinnamon is not a, what the iser would be, because cinnamon is the bark of a tree. So I don't think, so if you have the bark of a tree, firstly, I don't think it becomes orla. Even if the tree was planted the last 3 years, the fruits are orla, but the bark is not, the wood is not orla. And it's not chayv in trumas and maisis, as far as I know, because it's not fruit. It's not the fruit of the tree. So I'm not sure how you would get cinnamon as usher, unless a non-Jew bowed down to a maiden avodah
zarah. But if you're maftish it.
Yeah, okay, so that's essentially, David, what I just did as well. Which is, I said, if a guy bowed down to a maiden avodah zarah, so it's not really intrinsic, right? You could have both your example and my example have nothing to do with the fact that it's produce. It could be any. You mean my chair in my office, we could do the same thing too. So, but let's assume for the moment that you had, the cinnamon, which was iser. And you, or pepper. Pepper's a better example because pepper is from the fruit of the bush, although it's not, let's say the pepper, I think it is a tree, it would fall as a tree, so let's say the pepper is orla. So if you put less than a 60th of a pepper, in a dish, if you put, let's say, in 1/80th of your dish's pepper, I imagine it is going to be nasty. You're going to taste that pepper quite well. You don't need 1/60th of pepper in order to flavor it. So whatever amount that is that you need to flavor it, even though there's less than 60, 1/60th of the pepper, if it is there and to give flavor to the tavshil, it's usher to eat. So what the Prima Gadim is suggesting here is that even though you
mommy said those things. Even though
you can taste it and it's done for flavor, if you have more than shishim, it can be mevatel the musk. Okay. So that issue remains debated amongst poskim. There are those poskim who want to say that that you can rely upon issus isur shenishtana by an issur the rabbanon. You also have to define what issur shenishtana means. It's clear that when the substance is totally different, that's one thing. But what happens if something changes but it has a similar type of flavor? Is that called issur shenishtana? Okay, I'm not going to solve that particular problem right now.
In vitro meat is probably not considered different enough.
Correct. Well, you would say that the clone meat. I think they do think it's an issue if the clone meat is derived from cells that started from a nevela, let's say.
Right.
So then that would be a problem because it's not really different than the original issue. That would be the argument. It would be issue shenishtana. Let's put it that way.
Just that it goes through, if there's a single cell intermediate, then when it's a single cell, it's quite different than the,
Well, right. It's not, you can't taste the salmon and so on.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, one other note about, the musk, which is interesting, the Bir Halacha points out, he writes on Hamusk, Ayim Ishnabura, Umuchach Mizeh, the Davar Aser Bachim, Amotel Ariachba. Even if you're not allowed to eat the musk, clearly you're allowed to smell it. The Gemara says you're allowed to smell it. The Gemara talks about bracha yimei. The ad kan lo pligi harash v'harama el alachila avol lo hariach hala mahor v'shas the brachim gan kerelel. U'shamis mina the mutal hariach af in neima the hudam chayet. V'kach tosa b'bar hetei v'shem adarav v'dal et shindis. V'kach tosa b'man mordachai v'shem v'chadash I don't know who the Tiresh test is in Yeridea, Simon Kopesla, Indian Recha Milson. Fine. He then goes on to say that may only be true by something whose primary purpose is to smell. But if something is also there to be eaten, then it might be us to smell it because we're afraid that in the process you might actually eat it. Okay. Fine. Now, I want to, in this context, draw your attention to the other issue that I spoke about earlier and just talk about one detail within it. The Rush, at the beginning of the second parak of Pesach, speaking about the Mishnah that I mentioned earlier, that if you have chametz kodem zmano and you burn it to a crisp, then you're allowed to be nena on Pesach. But if you wait till the zman isur chametz comes, and now the edible bread becomes asur bano, and now you burn it, so the Mishnah says you're not allowed to benefit from the ashes. So the, so as I mentioned before, the principle of Isser Shenishtana does not help you in any way when it comes to Isurei Hana. Fine. But now, when we're talking about, the burning it before the Zman Isser Chametz, and then using it afterwards, so, the Rush writes, Umutar Bahana Aso, quoting the Rav Shita, Lo tzricha shecharacho kodem zmano, uchadarava da amar rava characho kodem zmano, mutar bahana aso af achar zmano. So that's just quoting the Gemara. That if you burn the chametz before the zman iser, you're allowed to be nene from the burnt product, from the ashes. Uchagon shenifstal milach alakelem, dumya de pasha itcha. Provided that, in burning it, it's been reduced to an inedible form. Right? If you just toast it a little bit, and if you toast bread, that is like burning bread. But nobody would say that you're allowed to have post on Pesach. It has to be nifta milach on the kelim. So now the Rush says, Yeshe rotzen lomar la dachana, the hu adinami achila. If you want to take the chametz that you burn, and you want to eat it, it's permissible. The afra ba'omahu, it's not considered bread, it's not considered chametz anymore. But he says, the lo mistaber, the afal gav the butle, the butla da'asa ochal eto ko'adam, even though you're eating it, but you're a meshugana. Nobody else would eat this. Mikomakom, kevan de iu ka'achel le'asr. Since he's eating it, it's asr. So this is what I mentioned before, what the Rush, what we term afshavet, that even though medina, it is not roi lachila, nobody else would eat it. Nonetheless, if I eat it, so that is considered asr, because clearly I am turning into a food. Okay. So this issue also, obviously, as you see, the Rush is debated. Is if it renders it inedible, is it awesome? Now, I'll tell you where this actually comes up, a very, very important din. I didn't have the chance to pull it in here, but maybe I will bring up my, give me one second, I'm going to pull up my Bar Ilan, and if I have it still on the screen, it's more challenging, or if I can get it very quickly, here we go.
What's the basis here to distinguish between Achila and Hana?
What do you mean by,
in other words, he says you can't eat it.
Oh, no, because the point is that it's not, once it's nistal me'achila sakelev, so using it doesn't, in other words, the key is it has to be an edible before the shas is performed. Therefore, if you burn it, and now you've destroyed it, and now you use it for purpose not that eating, it doesn't mean that it's food still. It doesn't mean it's edible. It just means you're using ashes for whatever you're using. But if you turn around and you eat it at that time, then what you're really showing is that it's not nifsal me'achila sakela. But as the Rush himself said, let's say I take my bread,
right,
and I toast it. No one says that, oh, now it's mutar on Pesach because I burned it. The answer is it has to be burned beyond being edible. So if I burn it, and then I sprinkle the ashes on the floor, so it's the Gemara Brachos has in the first
right.
Turk, I want to find the Shadim's footprints. The Shadim, according to the Gemara, have footprints like chicken feet.
Right.
So the fact that I'm doing that with the ashes doesn't mean it's a Roy Lachila. But if I eat the stuff that I burn, so that's
right,
suggesting that it's still Roy Lachila. Again, not Medina, because it's Batla Daiti Eitzel Kodam. My Das doesn't really count. But there's some type of an iser of my consuming it nonetheless, what we call achshav.
But if you use it for hana, isn't that still a problem?
No, because if chametz is rendered nifsal me'achila sakela before the end of the fourth hour, so then when the end of the fourth hour comes, it's not chametz anymore, so it's not nesa.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, once chametz is nifsal me'achila sakela, it's not called chametz anymore. And therefore, when Pesach comes, it doesn't make it usur. The Isser Hana doesn't apply. So some said, of course, in the Isser Achila doesn't apply either, because it's not chametz. But the Rush says, if I eat it, so then I'm showing that it really is Roy Achila, that's achshave, and therefore it's usur to eat.
But I have a question. I mean, is there anything else that's as unique as this, that your personal reason for eating it makes it usur? I mean, it's not a communal thing, it's not a halacha, it's your personal issue.
So, do I know of anything else like this?
Yeah.
There, I mean, again, normally what we would say is butla daito eto kod. That would be the typical thing that we would say. In this particular case, we don't. It's hard for me to come up with examples because there are a lot of things that are called dual. I mean, I have to think of a good example, but you can have a kli which is not finished yet, but I decide it's finished. And I decide I'm not putting any of the bells and whistles on it anymore. And my machshava now makes it into a kli that's mekabel tumah. But that's not a function of butla daito etzel kol adam. That's a function of sometimes people don't finish the kli. Even if they do finish it more at the time, if I decide that I'm finished with it, so my das governs my kli. You know, there are situations that where we say butla daito skoven, it doesn't matter what I'm thinking. We look at what people normally do. So here it appears that what the Rosh holds is that midaraisa butla daito etzel kol adam. My opinion doesn't count, but midarabanan, there's some type of an issue because I'm choosing to eat it. Okay. Now, I wanted to draw your attention to one other source, which is a major discussion exactly what the Rambam means, but it fits within this category as well. So this siman, Pezayin, that you see on the screen now, is the first siman in Hilchos Basar B'Challav. It's towards the end of the siman. And one of the Isurim, we discussed this when we learned Masechet Avodah Zarah. If I take milk, and into that milk I take the stomach lining, or the stomach, the meat of the stomach, of a non-kosher animal, which let's say it means an animal that wasn't slaughtered in the veil. So I'm not allowed to eat the stomach, the organ, because it's meat, because it's in a basar, and it's in the veil. Let's say I take that nevela thing and I dip it into the milk. What's going to happen is I'm going to make cheese. Now, how much of that basar is in, can you taste the meat in the cheese? Absolutely not. It's not basar b'chalav. Certainly, it's not basar b'chalav, it's not a basar b'chalav issue. Because if it were a basar b'chalav issue, I couldn't even taste the stomach of a kosher animal. An animal that was slaughtered properly and dip it into the milk, because that would be basar b'chalav. But we assume that there's no Isser Basa B'Challah there, because there's no flavor of Basa B'Challah. But here, the problem is not Basa B'Challah. The problem is it's Nevela, which is converting my milk into cheese. So one of the things that we learned about a long, long time ago, Maseches Avodah Zarah, probably 7 or 8 years ago at least, is that even though you can't taste the trace of the Nevela stomach lining in the milk, it's not batel because davar hamayim is not batel. We don't say that it's batel b'shishim. Normally, we say things are batel b'shishim because less than a 60th you can't taste. Which is why I mentioned to you earlier in our shiur tonight that if it's something that is asui l'taima, it's avi l'taima, it's made to flavor things like pepper, like spices, even less than a 60th can ask it. But here, you can't taste it at all. Nonetheless, because the non-kosher stomach gave the milk its form. It was mamid. It gave it its shape as cheese. It's as if the issur still exists. Even though I can't taste it. Even though it was less than a 60th, a davar hamamid is not batel. Most assume that that's an issur d'rabban. That midarais, that you can't taste it, it's not there. But midarabban, there's an issur of davar hamamid. Another example would be the following. Yeast. Let's say you need less than 1/60th of yeast in order to leaven a dough. And let's say the yeast were of truma. So if you leaven a dough with the yeast of truma, then the yeast is not batel, and the entire dough has the status of truma, may only be eaten by a kohen. Why? It's less than a 60th. You can't really taste it. The answer is because it leaves an impression on the dough. It leavens. It causes the dough to rise. It causes the dough to get a sour taste. And therefore, davar hamayim is not batel. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about here, which is the problem of using the stomach of a non-kosher animal. If you take a rennet, theoretically, if you extract a chemical rennet from the stomach lining of the animal, and now it's separate, and it's no longer on the stomach lining, it's separate, there's no issur. But they obviously couldn't do that, so they just took the stomach lining, and they dipped it in the milk, or they put the milk inside of it, and that caused the milk to turn into cheese. So now the Ramah says the following. Or hakeva, the word, also this is one of the very confusing things when you do this topic, The word keva, very often used in this context, refers to not the stomach of the animal, but the content of the stomach. Meaning there's another way of making cheese without using the hide of the animal, the or of the keva, the stomach lining. If a calf, let's say, has nursed from the mother, so any of you who are parents, have been parents or grandparents, but you should probably say your parents, know that when a child throws up milk after they've had a little bit of it, after it's been a while, what you get is cottage cheese. Why do you get cottage cheese? You get it because the rennet in the child's stomach starts the chain reaction, which begins the curdling of the cheese. So what you could do in theory is the following. If you had a calf that had nursed from its mother and then the calf died or you slaughtered it, it doesn't matter. The stomach contents of the calf are not, they're not basar mevil, not part of the calf. But because they were in the calf's stomach, they absorb some of the rennet. If you take that keva, it's keva refers to the stomach contents, and you put a little bit in milk, it may end up creating cheese out of that. So we're not talking about keva, we're talking about or hakeva, which is the stomach lining of some animal. So the Rama says sometimes they take the stomach lining, the famim molchanoso, they salt it, umiyabshinoso, and they dry it out, the nasa ka'ish. It's like wood. Umamalinoso halav mutter. And then you fill it with milk, it's mutter. So me acharshin ziyadesh, have ka'ish ba'alma v'imbo lechluchis basa. Once it's dried out, it's like wood, and it doesn't have any moisture of meat. So there's a big discussion about this Rama. What does the Rama mean to say? Is the Rama only talking about the Isser of Basar B'challah? Meaning, normally, if I had meat, let's say I took a stomach lining which was moist, it wasn't dried out like wood, and I leave milk soaking in it for more than 24 hours, we have a principle of Kavush Kemavushal. That's considered pickling it, and it would be awesome. But the Rama here is saying that if you put the milk in this dried stomach, this, I don't want to call it a flask, that's so dry that there's no moisture of meat at all. So the Rama is saying that that's not called basa. And therefore, it's not a problem of basa b'challah. Is that what the Rama means? Or does the Rama go mean further? Even if this animal was in the vein lamash, asr b'achima, nonetheless, if you take its stomach, which you're not allowed to eat, and you dry it out and make it into wood, to them, it's not considered food anymore, it's not edible, and therefore it can't possibly prohibit the milk. And nobody would eat it because it literally is like a piece of wood, totally dried out. But even if it's from a nevela animal, where it, once upon a time is a piasa, because it's totally dried out now, there's no issue whatsoever, and anything that it does to the milk is not going to be a problem. So this is a question, what the Rama means, but this is the last piece in this puzzle, which I'm not going to put together for us, because I'm not really sure how to put it all together. But this is one more instance of this sort of transformation of Isser into something else, either something different or something that is not really edible, that perhaps, not clear, perhaps might render the prohibited substance now permitted.
Rabbi, you mentioned if the enzymes were purified that it would be okay, but why is that any different than, any other product of a non-kosher animal, like
I think that it would be considered persha. It's something that comes from the animal that is totally inedible. It's like zea. But the zea is on the outside, this is on the inside of the stomach. That's why it would not be a problem. If I may give you another example, it's not exactly the same thing, but Fleischmann's yeast is not chametz osar. If you have Fleischmann's yeast, you can keep it on Pesach. You're obviously not allowed to put it into regular flour, because you will make hummus. But sourdough, on the other hand, what's the difference between sourdough and Fleischmann's yeast? The answer is Fleischmann's yeast doesn't have any wheat or bread in it or anything like that. It's just somehow chemically they extract the yeast and they dry it so that you can now use that easily. But Fleischmann's yeast is not sour. But that Fleischmann's yeast, when you put it into a dough and the dough's been sitting around for 7 days, it's now sourdough, even though it's not the bread that's doing it, it's the yeast in it that's doing it. The yeast takes on the characteristics of the substance it's in. But once you extract it and separate it, so the dough remains dough, and the yeast is not chametz anymore. So on Pesach, Lamaisa, you don't have to sell your Fleischmann's yeast.
Rabbi, a question. The concept of something change, something that its chemical and physical composition has changed. Is there a halachic aspect to something that you can't change back to what it was? Is that, well, the Shulchan Aruch didn't know about chemical composition in the 15th century. So, is there such a concept halachically that if the chemical composition changes, if you break it down in a laboratory and its physical characteristics and chemical are totally different, that it has a halachic change?
Well, that, I think that is this question of the Shemeshana. And if it was only us the Bachira, and now it's nothing like the original substance.
And it's part of a
general, we might say, is the Shishtanah. That's the Machlokas, Rabbi Elyon and the Rabbah. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, is that the basis for the purified enzymes being mutter? Is that actually the basis?
No, I don't think so. I think the idea is that the purified enzymes, in other words, in
that's
the same
just because
way,
it's not, it's disparish. Okay, got it.
Right, in other words, if you had the animal was sweating, and the sweat was still on, assuming the animal's flesh, you know, the hide were consumable, if the sweat were still there, we would, if the sweat's in the glands, we would say, probably, if I had to give a mushel, I know it's pretty unlikely, but if I ate the sweat glands of this nevela, in order to reach a kezias, I needed to include the sweat that was diffused throughout it, we would say, I ate a kezias of nevela. If I extract the sweat, and now I have the sweat, and I have the gland separated, and then I eat the two of them, the sweat is not mitzare to the yisra, because it's pershe ba'alma.
Right.
I think that's what we would probably say. Okay. All right, so that's the, anyway, that is, you know, this funny little gemara of something that we never, ever do, buried in the middle of brachos, turns out to be the launching pad for one of the most important issues in contemporary kashrus, right? Once upon a time, you didn't deal with this very frequently, but today, food production is so complicated. It's so, so complicated what they do that you actually do deal with these kinds of questions of Isser Shinishtana and even Akshade. One comment I should make, I don't know that all posts can, I don't think all posts can agree to this, but I think it's Rav Moshe's position, and I know Rav Schechter, I'm pretty sure, has said this as well. And the question is, what happens if you have a medication where they use one of the ingredients in it? Medication is not edible, it's not chewable, one of the ingredients is trait. Do we say it's not edible? Do we say, therefore, it's not roi l'achila tzmot? Or do we say that it's achshav? So what Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva, I think it's an Or Chaim Chelek Beis Siman Tzadi Beis, and I think I've heard this from Rav Schechter, is that achshav doesn't apply by something like medication, where when you eat it, you're not eating for the purpose of eating it. That's not achshav. You know, if I take my mostly burnt chametz and I say, yum, and like Cookie Monster, I eat it, so that means I think it's food. But you take medicine, not because you, even though it goes through your mouth, so it will get to the place you need to go, but it's not, nobody would look and say, you wouldn't say you're eating the pill. We would say you're swallowing the pill. Whereas the iser, which was rendered inedible, but you eat it, because ashave, we would say that you're eating. So Rav Moshe says that it doesn't apply, there's no concern of ashave. So certainly year round, there's not even a shaila, any medication that's not chewable, there should be, if it's not Isurei Hana'a, there should be no question whatsoever of Achshavei. It's not even clear by what the status would be. By Isurei Hana'a, it could be an issue. But by Isurei Achila, there isn't. Like, if you're worried about gelatin, for example, you know, and the gelatin might have come from nevela, it might have come from a pig, I assume gelatin comes from pig bones as well. If that was used in making a capsule or a tablet that is not chewable, there is no concern with eating at all. There are other, I forget who disagreed, and then I think the Chazon Ish proposed a compromise that if it's the active ingredient of the medication, it is a problem. If it's an inactive ingredient, then it's not a problem. But again, I don't think that if we accept the assumed practice in our community, we are megill to assume that that is not, that achshave is not a problem at all. Okay. Fine.
And if it's chewable, it is a problem?
So then you have, at least have to ask a question, because when something is chewable, so we have, at least we are, again, we're not eating it because, you know, oh, I want to fill myself up with it, but clearly it has flavor that could be, would be considered achila. So now the question is, how do you relate? Again, I assume that when it's chewable, it's usually not the trait ingredient that's the, they add sugar to it. And just so it goes down easier. Then at least you can say you're engaged in my sechidut. So now the question is, maybe you can separate. Say that I'm eating the sugar, but I'm swallowing the rest of the pill. Or not. Maybe you say that once you're doing it, at least that's called basha, that you're eating the concoction. Okay.
Rabbi, so does it make absolutely no difference if you have a choice between a vitamin that's in a gelatin capsule or pill form, or medicine that's in gelatin capsule or pill form? Should you have absolutely no concern that if you can get the pill form, you should get the pill form?
You know, if it's six of one, half a dozen of another, probably you should be choshesh for those poskim who say that actually they apply. But usually it's not six to one, half a dozen other. It's harder to get one another. One of them doesn't work the same way as the other. So I don't think one has to be terribly concerned about it. If you put the two in front of you and say pick one, why not pick the one that has fewer issues? But usually that's not the case. And if it's not the case, then you don't have to worry as long as the medicine is not edible, not sure. Okay. So let's turn back to the Gemara on Daf and Gimel and Aleph. And the Gemara there asks the question. So now, after everything we've said and done tonight, let's remember the Gemara said that all mugmaros, meaning things that you burn, you make a barata. Some except for musk, because it doesn't come from a tree, a plant, it comes from an animal. So the Gemara, the second to last narrow line in the Gemara, may say, in the Gorosan Bore Atse B'samin, Ela al Afar Simon Shal Beis Rebbe, Bel Afar Simon Shal Beis Kesar, Ve'al HaHadas Shebechoma. So this price says that you only make a Bore Atse B'samin on the following three things. Afar Simon of Beis Rebbe, Afar Simon of Beis Kesar, and a myrtle branch anywhere. What is Afar Simon? So it's tempting to look at it and think, it looks like it's persimmons, which I believe it might be a modern Hebrew, but it is not assumed to be persimmons. Here, Shemen Afar Simon is, I think, balsam oil, which is some type of a tree. I think there's a connection to Hatsari Ein Bigelot, the, what is that called? The Balm of Gilad or something like
balm.
That?
Balm.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I know... Apparently, there's some tree in the Catskills, which the early settlers, they thought was the Tsari of Gilead. Don't ask. I believe the Shemen Afar Simon might be even a sap of one of these trees. So it was very valuable, but it's not related to percentage. So the Brisa says you only make a Bereate B'samimon either one of these two Afar Simons or in a myrtle. And yet, Ze'iri had said that you make a Bereate B'samimon all those maros, except for Mas. So, if you look at our printed Gemara, it says Tiyufta. Now, without even looking any further, which means its position is rejected, and it means you only make Bereate B'samimon these three things. However, if you were paying attention to the letters going back to the previous statement, five, the fifth to last narrow line, Amar Ze'iri Kolham Mugmaris Bevarcha Alem Batzei B'samim. The letter is there, suggesting that we paskin that way. And in fact, we do paskin that way. So the question, of course, is, well, what do you do with the tifta? If you look in Tosfos, the second to last Tosfos on the page, the Al HaHadash Shebechol Makom, Tosfos writes, the Bal Halachos Tidoros, Gedolos, lo garis tiufta. He didn't have the gift of tiufta in the Gemara. Umishani, the Gemara gave an answer. Tana, hadas, the chol didat milay. It means that a hadas, a myrtle branch, and anything that's like a myrtle branch. So what does that mean? Klomar she'ikaro l'rea. This primary purpose is for smelling. Lafuke tapuchim v'chavushim, to exclude apples and quinces. I have no idea what a quince is, but that's what a chavush is. It's some kind of a fruit. She'en ikaran l'reach ela l'echol. If you have an apple, apples, I guess, have a slight smell. Maybe they once had a stronger smell than they do now. We've kind of bred everything out of our foods. But if you have a fruit that is meant for eating, but you want to smell it, you don't make a boreas in the summer. I believe the Gemara will say on the next summer, you make shenasan reach tov b'feros. So that's what the Gemara is saying, that when we say you only make of Atei B'Samim on Afar Simon, and Hadas, it means anything that's like that. Something whose primary purpose, a wood product, a tree product, whose primary purpose is for smelling, as opposed to something that is for eating. But the Braisa did not mean to exclude everything besides these three things. No, it includes these three things and anything that is like these three things. Okay.
A quick question.
I want to correct one thing I said. Afar Simon is not the oil. Afar Simon is the actual, the thing that comes from the tree, whatever that is. I don't know if that's the sap or something else. Shemen Afar Simon is going to be an oil that you perfumed with the Afar Simon, but it's actually oil. So that's what the Gemara is going to talk about next. But can I have a question, Sam?
Yeah, Rabbi. If you are using certain smells, to hide other smells, for example.
Like bad smells?
Like very bad smells of a dead body. So you're using something, so therefore you don't care for someone, but you're just doing it because you can't work with a dead body unless the smell is hidden in some way.
So the Gemara, I believe, not in this parak, I believe in the 8th parak, the Gemara says, somewhere later, but not the 8th parak, says that you don't make a brach at all on someone whose purpose is lahavi reach ra.
Okay.
If its purpose is not for the b'samim, but rather to mask something else, which is a bad smell, then it's no brach.
Okay.
It's called b'samim shomesim, and if that was the case in the Gemara.
Right.
Okay.
The Mugmar, the Ramban, the Mishnah said if you put Mugmar under, and Maimonides talks about this too, you put Mugmar under a body, can you do it on Shabbos? So, I always point, and we do it sometimes, you know, as practical, purposes these days too, you know, when you're involved with a body that's been beaten up, so.
Okay. So now the Gemara asks, first wide line. Omer le'Rav Pistler of Yitzchak, Tai Mishcha Dafar Simon, Mai Mivarech Kedei Lavei. What bracha do you make on it? So it's not a Afar Simon itself, it's something in the oil. So, Omer le'Hachi Ama Rav Yehuda, Rav Yitzchak quoted Rav Yehuda saying, Borei Shemen Artzeinu, the one who created the oil of our land. So Omer le', he said, Nah, Bar Minei Rav Yehuda the Chaviva le'Eretz Yisrael. Yehuda was a big Zionist. He loved Eretz Yisrael. So his nosach of the bracha was Bar Hashem and Arzeinu. But we don't hold that way. So Lechulei Amamai. What does everybody else say? So Amalei Hachim Rabbi Yochanan Borei Shemen Arez. That's the bracha that you would make on Shemen, Shemen Shel Afar Simon. Okay. Now, the Gemara goes a step further and wants to define when do we say when something is mixed into oil, when do we say that that it still retains atzei b'samim, and when do we say it is just considered flavoring the oil? So Amar Rav Ava Bar Ava, Hai Kisharta Mivorchen Ilave Boreas Atzei B'Samim. What is Kisharta? Rashi says Kosh. You might recognize that I believe Kosht is in Hitha Makitoras. A Kosht Shneimasa. That's its portions of the Makitoras. What is Kosht? Kosht is Kastos. That's what it's translated as. What is Kastos? It's something derived from a flower. It's similar to a daffodil. All right, that's what it is. So it has some type of a smell. So you said that if you're dealing with the Kosht itself, you make a bracha of atei b'samim. Avo mishcha kevisha lo. If you put the kosht in oil, and now the oil smells of the kosht, so you don't make a bore atei b'samim, all you see is the oil, so presumably you make bore sheminari. V'rav kahana amar afilu mishcha kevisha. Even if the whole kosht is pickled in the oil, pickled is not the right term, but it means it's soaked in the oil, then you make a borei atzei b'samim. Aval mishcha tefina, if you grind up the kosht and then you put it in, lo. Why? So I presume the way Rashi understands is that when the kosht is whole and you put it in, so the kosht, the whole kosht flavored the oil, and therefore it's considered kosht. But if it was already ground up where it doesn't, it's not kosht anymore on some level, and now you mix it in, then you can't make a bore after the sun. And there are Dai, Amri, the last opinion, is afilu mishlatina. It doesn't really matter, even if you ground it up, even if it almost was unrecognizable as kosht when you put it in. Nonetheless, you still make a bore ase besamim on it, because the be'en of the kosht is still actually in the shema. Okay. Alright, so maybe I will stop here. The Gemara is going to go on to talk a little bit more about a few other things, specific brachos. One particular point I do want to mention to you, I think I may mention this the last time also. Tosos di bar maskil, in Mem Gimel Malach, Alahadash Shebechol Makom, writes the following. If you look in the sixth line of Tosos, the Alahadash, he writes, O Misha Holeh Fabai Shiesham Besamim. You're walking in a house where there are a lot of spices. The yesham mine besamim shemei riach behem. You have different kinds of besamim that you're smelling. But umesapgalei, imi min eitz, imi min adama. You're not sure whether it grows from a tree, in which case you make a borei ase besamim, or it grows from the ground, you make a borei isfei besamim. Yesh mefarshim shemevarech shakol niyebid vana. Now those who say that, you make a shakol on it. The alkulam amar imbir shakol yasa. But varav rabbeinu moshe mikutzi, and that's how we pass him. We pass him that just as shahakol is the bracha kolalas for all foods, borei mine besamim is the bracha hakolalas, the all-inclusive bracha for the bracha of Reah. All right. Any questions?
Thank you.